من يريد الله به خيرا يفقهه في الدين.
Intentions will decide the ruling of an act. Halalun unravels with a positive effect. Haramun is harmful, the opposite of good, corruptive, destructive, but little understood. Why is the haram little understood? Because we know it's haram, but we still do it. Knowledge is before statement and action. What can we learn that will unlock our potential? What can we learn that will save us from the fire? Welcome to Outlining Fiqh. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to a special episode of Outlining Fiqh. We are pausing the reading of a summary of Islamic jurisprudence until after Ramadan. And the Sheikh will just come in and give us some general reminders in this episode. I apologize, I didn't get the recording started in time, so it will start a few minutes into the talk. So, barakallahu feekum.
Some armies like Sultan Toghrul, okay, Zenji. I'm trying to remember his name. His name is, I think it's Zainuddin. I forget his name. Nuruddin Zenji. Naam. Jazakallah khair. Nuruddin Zenji. He sent, and he was the forebearer of the Sunnah at that time as a sultan. He sends his army down there to save the Egyptian Shia Khalifa. They have a total different Khalifa at that time. From being murdered and overwhelmed and conquered and colonized by the Crusaders. And this is exactly how, and then once they get down there, hold on, let me just give it to you. Once they get down there and they save them, the Shia kill his commander. They actually murder the commander that was sent down there and saved them from the Crusaders. And that's how Salahuddin becomes the commander in Egypt, because he was the assistant commander at the time. And they didn't mess with the people. Why? Because just because the government is one way, it doesn't mean all those people actually know those deviant beliefs or even believe in those deviant beliefs or have a strong hold on them. Rather, the people follow their leadership. So when you have a good leadership and you have education, people will become more knowledgeable. That's the main reason. That's the main reason. Not because there exists some hardcore deviant people, no. But like we learned the rule that every mubtadi, every person that's doing some bid'ah is not a mubtadi. But rather the leader of those guys is the mubtadi, not the people doing some bid'ah. Does everybody understand this unique? It doesn't just stop with that. It doesn't stop anywhere. The same thing can be said about the kuffar. How many of us know kuffar who are not really believing in any of the kuff that they're in, but they don't believe in Islam because they don't know about Islam? It hasn't been presented to them in a way that they can devour it or understand it. Or there are circumstances that prevent them from getting a good picture of it. But they don't believe that, a lot of that stuff. But the only title they know is kuffar. So they hold on to that. This is very important for our fiqh. Because we see Muslims using these terms of division. And in the language and the mentality is to, separate us even to the point where our dem is halal. Even that we don't even care that the actual enemy is killing all of us. Okay? And that the solution is not what we're saying. Not promoting the division, but promoting the cure. You follow me, guys?
I follow you, Sheikh. Why do people always push this like division type of stuff?
Anyway, this goes
see
back
it a lot
to
from like Arabs and yes. Stuff like that. Claim to be a point.
Let me explain something else to you. Most of the people you call Arabs are not Arabs. or at least are not 100% Arab. Okay? And usually probably not even 50% Arab. And half of them don't even know it. Or don't care. Like what we're talking about, the Syrian people. A lot of the Syrian people are so mixed with the Greek people, with the Kurdish people, you know, with the Turkish people, with the Albanian people. Look where it's located. The problem is geography. Most people have not studied geography, and that's on purpose. One of the biggest tricks I've been telling you guys for so long now is worldview, 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 worldview. I push this term down your throats and say this is aqidah. And then I challenge you. I say, look, the world is not round like they show you. There's not one real picture of this planet that you have seen from space. Every last one of them is a lie, a blatant, intentional, visual lie. What is its purpose? To sahiru, to enchant you, to give you an aqidah, a false worldview. Okay? And it's so much so people don't even think about it. They show you the picture of the rocket ship flying in the sky or as it's out in space. Who took the picture then? If it's the rocket ship out in space, who took the picture external to the rocket ship? You know, was he got a stick on a camera on a stick as they're shooting through the sky? And I'm talking to ones that are right here on in the lower sky. Who took the picture? If this the first guy's landing on the moon and they have him land coming down, who took the picture of them shooting back up into the sky? Who took the picture of the Earth so far away? It's all a bunch of lies. And that's just the beginning of it. The earth, the sun being so huge and everything circling it. That's not an aqidah of Islam. That's the aqidah of the fire worshippers. And the fire worshippers come from Fars. What's the Fars? What's the word Fars in English nowadays? Persia or Iran. And these fire worshippers have never stopped since they've entered into Islam, trying to destroy Islam from within, from its intelligentsia, from its science. And for this reason, I'm always mentioning to you the Bathiniya, because they are inside of Islam, promoting and pushing these things, these agendas. And this is why they're so against Imam al-Ghazali. As the single most important sheikh that we can talk. Like they push, you know, Ibn Taymiyyah so much. And there's nothing wrong with Ibn Taymiyyah, but he's not the only sheikh of Islam in the world. And in my opinion, not even one of the greatest. Okay? And I only have to say that is because they push him as though he's the only one, the one and only sheikh of Islam. And if he said it, it's like the Prophet said it. It's not true. They even went so far to try to make ijma of Ibn Taymiyyah. How in the world do you make an ijma of one person? Okay, that's how far they're going with you playing word games and mind games with people. So they tell you, don't listen to Imam al-Ghazali. Where Imam al-Ghazali wrote a famous book, Ihya Ulumuddin. And if you understand just the title, you understand who he is fighting. The bringing new life, revitalizing this study of the sciences of Islam so as not to take it blindly. Even in what they're telling you, think about what you're being told at every minute. Every time someone's speaking, he is called a professor for a reason, because he's professing something. You need to make sure you understand what the objective of the speaker is. And so these people, some knowingly, some unknowingly, are promoting these differences that they have had for centuries in Islam and telling us converts or us younger Muslims that we have to pick a side and that no matter what's going on, these are the important issues. And you hear their language, the language of ignorance, the language of jahiliyyah, the language of hate, so much so against each other that you wonder, how are we talking about another set of Muslims? And we see the nonchalant, it's almost glee when the kuffar are killing the Muslims. It makes you wonder, what do you mean? What's going on here? I literally saw some shuyukh from Egypt and some from Kuwait laughing at the Palestinian people, making joke that some of the women weren't wearing their khimars right, as though that was enough reason for her to get raped, murdered, and there's nothing more to say. House burned down, killed, and all this. Like, oh, she's saying this, oh, help me, but she doesn't even have her khimar on right. Are you serious? Even if she was a kafir naked in the street, this wouldn't be the Islamic stance. So we have to stop. We Westerners, you have to realize the Westerners are one ethnic group, if we want to call it. That's the best term. Let's say I'm going to take Abdul Qadir here, right? Take Dr. Maisha, Tughro, and Abu Sa'id, neither one of you, or even Baraka, all of us are from a different ethnic background, but we're all from the same culture, right? All of us from the that Roman culture. I'm going to call it Roman because this is what the Prophet ﷺ called the Westerners, right? Suhaib al-Rumi was a pure Arab from the Yemeni Himyar tribe. But because as a youngster, he was kidnapped and taken to Rome and raised in the Rome in the Western, they called him Suhaib al-Rumi. And if you didn't know any better, you'd think he was a Roman. Even his Arabic was heavily accented with his Roman accent because that's his culture. So we have to understand that our culture, this Western culture, is one. Okay, and so we have to understand what we are getting ourselves into and listen carefully and not allow others to determine for us how we should view Islam. Not even me. Open up your ears, open up your eyes, and listen to what everyone is professing. And if you agree, know why you agree. And if you disagree, know why you disagree. And in class here, amongst your teacher, yes, I'm going to challenge you to articulate that. Not necessarily because you have to prove to me what you believe. No, that's bainaka wa bain Allah. That's between you and Allah. But because it's a school and I'm trying to teach you and I want you to know what I believe is the best understanding. So that's what I'm promoting, of course. But I want you more than anything else. Well, of course, the most thing you want is you to have success fi dunya wal akhirah. But the skill of dissecting what you hear and not blindly listening and absorbing and not thinking for yourself. And this is what is meant when you hear in the books what can be translated that a real Muslim is a free thinker. Not as they turn it around to say that a Muslim is a free thinker and they turn it into this liberal thing. I could do what I want. No, that's not what a free thinker is. A free thinker, according to the Islamic way, is that he knows how to think. That's what an education is supposed to afford you. An education is designed to teach you how to think, not what to think. Okay? And then the Quran, the Sunnah, it sets perimeters of what you have to accept. And if you don't, then you are a fool. You are a renegade to your Lord and to your own soul. Outside of that, between the perimeters, do what you like. Da-da-da-da-da. Act how you like. Because you're within the hudud. That's the freedom that Islam gives. But we have gotten so wrapped up in other things, we have not experienced that freedom. Because we haven't mastered the hudud. And it doesn't take a long time to master the hudud. What it takes is tarkiz, focus. Focus, and I mean that for a layman. So now we have to realize that we Westerners have had, that's what I was saying before, us Westerners have a inferiority complex and a superiority complex for somebody. We think that because we live in the West, or because we've converted, or whatever, for whatever reason, that the others know more than us, and that their water is cleaner and watery, more watery. And that's not the case. That's not the case. The Afrocentric one thinks that Africans have the old history in there. No, Africans have been colonized and they've lost their damn minds, just like we lost our damn minds here in the United States. The culture, the habits, the traditions, the history, the science, the math, the medicine, is, if it's still there, if it's known, it's underappreciated. And people have picked up very negative, very inhumane, very petty habits. And the same thing can be said about the Asians. And the same thing can be said about the Arabs. And the same thing can be said about the Central Asians. So we're looking for everybody else to be better than us and to know better than us. And some of us have replaced Jesus Christ, the white man with the long hair, okay? Da Vinci, right? He drew that picture of the Last Supper in the Vatican, Leonardo da Vinci. His uncle. You guys know what picture I'm talking about? The Last Supper, it's in the Vatican up in the roof?
Yes. Yes, Jake.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, that's a picture of his...
You know, that's a picture of his uncle and 12 criminals. Literally 12 criminals. He was able, because back in those days, and even now, you could rent criminals. So he rented 12 convicted criminals for the day. You know, or I don't know if it was the day, for however long he took them to draw the picture of them. And had them sit in to be the 12 disciples. And this picture now is ingrained in the minds of so many people. So many people. So you find a lot of African American people who come to Islam, who had white Jesus on their mind and were feeling inferior before that. They replace it with a little bit browner skin Arab. They don't say it, but in practice, if an Arab says it and anybody else says it, no, we're going to go with the Arab, what the Arab said. No Dalil, nothing. Why? Because he's Arab. This is an aqidah. It is an aqidah of inferiority. You could have some great shiuch from America. What do they tell you? There ain't no shiuch in America. What they mean by that, there is no convert shiuch in America. Okay, that's what they mean. Because they have their amjad, they have their different boards where they promote themselves and at the same time keep you from getting any standing. Totally negate your education and your credentials. And then when you look at theirs is not even based on Islamic education. Rather, it's mustashrik. Most of the things they've learned is from the Yahud, your Jews. If not all of it. Or some unknowns whose aqidah and deen and contributions to Islam is cloudy, murky. At most. And they've done no da'wah in the United States to the Kufar people, the people who they claim they come into the country. No, rather their da'wah is one of exclusiveness, not inclusiveness. And it includes a heavy racism towards African people, Latino people, unless the Latino people look white. Listen, and even if you are white, I saw how they treated Jamal Zorobozo. They took his white card away because he's too Islamic. First, they were like, oh, Jamal Zorobozo. But then when they saw that he didn't talk like a white man, meaning, you know, the racist thing. Okay, well, we don't want to hear from you. And this is a double, you know, edged sword. Why? Because I can't normally, you and I can't go to their country and be on their legenda. You can't go and determine and tell them in their countries how Islam should be run in their countries. They don't care if you live there 20, 50,000 years. They're not going to allow that to happen in a lifetime. But they think I could come to an American in 2 years. Oh, I know English. I will, you know. Oh, you speak Arabic good. Well, you speak English good. Then they feel, oh, what the, no, you got a little accent, you got to work. And, you know, I do that, you know, to check them. But all this is due to the Batania. It all comes back to division and dividing. Okay? Yeah, whenever they say, oh, you speak good Arabic, I say, yeah, you know, you speak, you know, halfway decent, good English, you know, keep working at it. Okay? We can understand what you're saying. Yeah. And when they say, well, I know the United States, I say, really? You know the state you've been in? Maybe. Maybe you know a little bit of it. You know the college and the place where you've been back and forth, because really, they really don't know the country. One guy tried to tell me he spent 2 years in London, so he knows the West. I said, you know, well, I lived in Mecca for 3 years, let's say, back and forth. And the last 3 years, I've, you know, been living there. Can I say I know Mecca? No. You don't know Mecca like that. No, you. Okay, well, then you don't know. You don't know London. You don't know the West. I said, have you ever been to the hood? What do you mean? That's what I mean. Okay. You know what I'm saying? If you don't know the significance of Alabama, when we say Alabama, you don't even know anything about the country.
That's a profound point right there.
Say again?
That's a profound point.
Yeah.
Mention Alabama.
Just mentioning it. Yeah, they don't even know what that,
they don't understand the significance.
No.
Yeah.
And so you don't know, you can't even give a fatwa to us then. Because part of, and this is very important for you guys to know, because you are the faqih. And knowing the culture is the first condition for you to make a ruling. Not the first, but amongst the five. The first condition is knowledge. So I guess it is part of the first condition. Because the knowledge is not just knowledge of what the Sharia, literally law, says, but the application in that culture demands that you understand the earth. It demands that you understand the earth. Everything, why is that important? Can you guys tell me why? Why is knowing the earth important?
I would say from a legal aspect, for sure, so that you don't give a ruling that person get arrested or something like that.
Okay, that's one thing. Let's say that's not the fear. What were you going to say, Dr. Maisha?
I was going to say, for example, like, I don't know if this is going to be what you mean, but in other countries, if a child is, the definition of a child, for example, the definition of a child, even though technically in Islam, a girl may be mukallaf at 13, you cannot say that it's okay for a 50-year-old man to marry a 13-year-old girl in America.
No, that you can't.
That girl is not ready. She's not prepared.
I don't believe that. But I don't believe that in most cases, because they're having sex with 50-year-old men at 12 in America.
That doesn't mean they're ready to be a proper wife.
I disagree with that. Okay? But the reason why they're not ready to be proper wives is because they're not, that's their home training.
That's what I'm saying.
If No, but that's home training, and that's time from time, because when we were children, women were marrying guys that old. I'm and our parents now. Were doing you're it. And our grandparents did it.
But you're talking about knowing the customs of a place. That custom is gone.
I know, but my point is this. I agree with you in that, yes, in the United States, a 12-year-old cannot marry a 50-year-old or even a 20-year-old, okay? And because the culture does not allow it, okay? However, I disagree with your reasoning why, but that's another issue. The point is that you're correct. If you don't know that, because in Senegal, a girl will get married, and even here, anywhere in Africa, pretty much. If she's 12 years old, she already knows how to play house. Okay? And lots
that's
of
all
times.
I'm saying. I'm not saying that biologically she doesn't want to interact. I'm saying that typically, I'm not saying every single case. Like, I have my girls
no,
are
I
ready
agree
by
with
like.
You. I'm agreeing you with know. You. I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah.
But I'm saying is that in Africa, though, and even in Asia.
Right. In Africa, it's different.
Not even in Africa. In Asia, I remember being in the Philippines in the 80s. A 16-year-old was considered an old prostitute. Okay? A 16-year-old. Okay, because when we landed in the Philippines, the generals go out and they talk to the pimps. And they get certain type of agreements and stuff like that from the pimps that the girls are all clean and stuff like that. So when we went to the places and I saw how young those girls were. And everybody was talking about, hey, if she's over 16, watch out because she's old. She's been in the business for 4 years or something like that. You know, I was like, whoa, why are they arresting these guys for going back to the United States and being pedophiles when you're training them to be pedophiles here in the Philippines? Subic Bay, Manila, and Manila and places like that. Training them to do that. My point is that it's context. The reason why you have to know the earth is for context. The Islamic Sharia is not in a bubble. There has to be context. And you can't apply that law in the context of those people unless you know the customs, the history, the earth of those people. You know? And this is why in the United States, the earth changes because there's what we call a generation gap. That you don't find in other countries, okay? Or if you do have it, it's only recently that it's been gaining control because tradition usually lasted in other countries, whereas the United States wants to break that and they want to promote a generation gap because a generation gap means a loss of culture, a loss of unity, in what is the expectations and demands are of a people, what we would call, in other words, tradition. So it's their goal to have this generation gap. And they achieve it through TV and distractions with the games and this thing. What's the purpose? If you ever look at anything, you have to look at two things. Number one, who is being targeted? And what is the objective of this particular activity? What does it do and what does it prevent you from doing? So let's take this mentality towards the video games, the ones that just, you know, they have all these stupid games nowadays. You see the children, all they're doing is, you know, moving round rocks and blocks so that something could fall down and, oh, everybody's moving. Oh, trying. Or even if it's a shooting game, how do we maneuver killing all these millions of people and everything like that? And what is the purpose of that? The purpose is to give a false sense of accomplishment. Oh, I got to this level. Oh, I killed this many people. Or I got so many, the king to come down here and to kick the ogre and stuff like that. The main thing is to give them a continued sense of accomplishment while actually accomplishing nothing and producing nothing. But what does it also do? It prevents them from learning something. How would they otherwise spend their time if they were not so distracted with these stupid games and things like that? What would they have the possibility of learning during that same time? And all we have to do is look at other cultures, what they are learning during those same time frames. when we look, for example, on Chinese TikTok and we see children doing amazing things at the ages where our children act like their thumbs are, they have 10 thumbs on their hand. Why is it and how is it? How they spent their time. Nothing different in the child. Nothing different in the intellect. It's how they, at least at the beginning, it's just how they spent their time. And if we look at our children in our time frame, what we did and what our children are now being exposed to, it becomes this mentality of weakness from day one. Mentality of they can't, I can't, no one can't, that's too much right now, until there's no more right now, it's too late now. It's beyond time, never enough, never old enough to do anything till it's too late for them to learn how to do that thing, and they're behind. Where did this come from? This ultra feminist movement that doesn't even represent itself as a feminist movement sometimes. This man movement where there's homosexuality and there's man movement where you cannot be the man. You're now toxic and over masculine and leave that to the women mentality. Whereas now the one who is supposed to be in charge is no longer in charge. Dhulm, which is the opposite of justice, the balance that Allah has struck. When you're not following it, we see the results, even if it's 10 years later. We see the results, which is the ultimate destruction of the family. Internally and for the next generation, because now you don't have a product that is a positive product that can do anything in the time frame it's supposed to do it at. And the women now that have got the jobs and pushing their careers and are no longer getting married, but they're having sex. But they're having sex with all these different men. You hear all these super ultra career women having sex with all these men till they're in their 30s, late 30s and 40s, and then they want to have a child. You know, what is the effect on that on her body? On her DNA? What is the effect on that on her mentality on what marriage is like? What is the effect on that when she gets into the home and tries to have a baby now, and now she's older though? And if she hasn't had babies where her body's gotten used to its strength and knows what to do and everything like that, because we do find women having babies at ages older than what the medical industry tells them that they can, especially when they have less exposure to the negative mentality of the medical industry. You look at a place like Niger where they have very little hospitals. They have the most children than any woman in the world. The most. And you can take that as an example for other places as well. So what I'm saying is that we as educators, we as lawyers, we as faqih, fuqaha, we have to open our eyes and our ears and do better as this year comes, as Ramadan comes. There is a huge demand for a the revitalization of these sciences. There is a huge demand on Islamically thinking people who can help the regular person find solutions. There's a huge demand that. And you guys are in position to be those people. However, you have to focus more. You have to complete the assignments I give you in a timely fashion and in the way I'm giving, because it takes more, guys. There's another, you know, I want you to think about this. Some people, I told you guys the story of Talma Hakim. Talma Hakim thought he was so smart. Talma Hakim is expression of a student of knowledge, or person whose desire is to learn. But he thinks he knows as much as the teacher. He thinks he knows he's equal with the teacher, or the teacher doesn't know me. He has this mentality. Said that all he needs, just tell me the books that I needed to know. So he gathered the books that he thought he should know. Taught himself quickly and started to teach. Right? This is what Talma Hakim did. He thought, I'll just get the books and read them. Then I'll know what the teacher read. What did he study? Oh, I'll study that myself. And then he say, I'm ready. I am ready. So he's his student. He's the teacher. He gave himself the degree. And not only that, he gives him a teaching degree. But Talmud Hakim got everything wrong, right? Because trying to get knowledge from reading books is like trying to get married based on the looks. It ain't the book. The book is the teacher's helper. It's like chalk. It's like a board. The knowledge comes from the people. Our deen is based on the isnad. The isnad is learning it from your ear to from his mouth to your ear. From the experience the teacher has with you. Yeah, watching videos works. It has some good things to it. But it's not that it doesn't fulfill the obligation that your teacher knows you. So he talks directly to you. When I talk to Dr. Maisha, I know who I'm talking to. I may raise my face. I may yell at, I know I'm talking to her. When I talk to Toguro, I may be rough with him. Because I know who I'm talking to. And when I talk to any one of you, I have a specific, direct way and idea and that I'm dealing with. Who I'm dealing with. Because the student has to humble himself. The student has to break himself for the teacher. And if he can't do that, he won't break himself for the people that come to him or her for solutions. He'll be lopsided, arrogant, ugly. And assumptuous. And I'm always talking to you guys about the harmful effect of a high intellect. Why? Well, let them eat cake. Why don't they just? Why didn't they just? This is the harmful effect of a high IQ. And why the person has to know the culture, know the earth, understand the mentality of the criminal, understand the mentality of the person that's standing in his court. This, you know, you have to be able to put yourself in other person's shoes so you can understand how much of a crime or was it a crime at all? What would we expect of a person in that position under those circumstances? That's what determines the crime. And this is why we don't cut the hand of a thief who steals food. Never that. Never that. A thief that steals food is not a thief. That's what we're saying in the Sharia. He is a person in need. And he did what he had to do to fulfill that human need. And what would I do under those circumstances? What would be expected of any normal, reasonable person under those circumstances? This is what you have to do. And this is why I demand from, let's say, Truguru, watch other judges in petty courts. Because the petty courts, you're dealing with the regular everyday people. The guy who skipped bail, the guy who got his car towed, the guy who's having a fight with his ex-wife. All these things you get to hear the court dealing with a normal person. You hear the loom the court puts on them or the understanding the part the court gives them. The levity. That the court has in both directions when they good judges who understand and apply the rule of the people and the other judges who don't care and they are fascists. This is the rule, that's the rule, and nothing but the rule, go to hell. And you can smell the loom when you see that. You guys understand?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Too much by the book. Is that fascist? That's what it means.
Absolutely.
Look, you asked me a question, Mr. Abu Saeed. Ask the question again.
The word fascist, from what I understand, it means.
Okay, stop.
Too much by the book.
Before you ask, what should you do? This is what's demanded of you. No, listen. This is what's demanded of you guys, what I expect from you. If I use a term and you don't understand that term, then I expect you to, at the very least, write that term down. You're in class. This is law class. I'm going to get a book for you guys. I'm going to get a movie for you guys. It shows law school. I don't expect you to just ask me any old question. My law teachers cursed me out. You know, curse everybody out in class, call them dummies, all types of idiots and stuff like that. When they did stuff like, I don't do that because we're Muslim. But I sure as hell don't expect you to ask me a question that you should do some due diligence first. Why? Because even if you don't get your answer from that, you have an educated idea and some basis so that when you come to me and ask, well, I heard you use the word fascist the other day to mean da 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 da. And now you understand what a fascist is from a legal or from a technical perspective. And now you heard my usage countering that or some angle of that. Now you can ask the question. Does that make sense, everyone?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Back to Maisha.
Yes, sir. Yes.
When you were in med school, did you go to pre-med?
You have to do pre-med to do med, yes.
Okay, so when you were pre-med, did the doctor explain every term or did he expect you to know every term in the book?
No, you have to study the book before you came.
Thank you very much. That's the same experience I had. You know, you have to know these. They expect you to know, and if you don't know it, what the hell are you doing in this class?
No, you would get
what the school had. Yes or no, Dr. Maisha?
Yeah, you would get a zero. Like, we got a 1 to 5 grade. And if you wanted to get a 5, you had to know what they were going to teach before they taught it. You, like,
every day you came to class, yeah, you had to know exactly what they were talking about.
You did. You already had to know.
You know, and so I expect you guys to know terms. And if you don't know the term, and I use a term, and the thing about our legal school is that we are learning terms in 2 languages, okay? Sometimes 3. What I mean by that?
That's the same term.
I know. The thing difference in med school is that you already have it laid out. The anatomy, physiology, these type of things are different. Here in Islamic law, what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to give you Islamic terms, and I'm going to give you legal terms according to the United States and other legal terms as used internationally. Okay, guys? You understand that?
Yes, sir.
I don't know. You guys hear or not? I only hear, you know, I hear Dr. Maisha, I hear Turgula. And what about, you know, Oshibot?
Yes, sir. I was something for my family.
Okay. I just want to make sure that you guys are listening to me. So that if I don't necessarily, maybe you're not going to know the term I'm going to use. However, write it down immediately. Find out what it means. And then question it. Ask about it. What this context? And know the context that you meant. Don't come say, well, you mentioned hey, quote me. Hey, you said X, Y, Z. And it was in reference to this, that, and the other thing. These classes are taped. So that I can understand the context that you're asking about again at that time. So yes, just to answer this question, a fascist is a person who does not care about the persons that the law is being applied upon, but rather they are pretending to be a stickler for the rule. Okay? No understanding of the human. Okay? And so we find this in American law, kathiran jiddan. You find it in interaction. Sometimes we're coming to arrest, let's say some police come, we're coming to arrest John Doe the third. Well, John Doe the third is 10 years old. We don't care. That's what the paper says. John Doe the third. Are you sure you don't mean the second? No, it says the third here. It could be he's only 10 years old. No, whatever. We're going to be fascist. Do what the rule says. This is it. Period. Makes no sense. Or what we see in American law, they say, well, we found you not guilty. We see that there's extenuating reasons behind this. But since they found you guilty and this is your third time, we can't do anything. You have to do life. What, are you crazy? Yes, well, that's it. You know, you only get this amount of time period done. You're over. Or, like they say, oh, well, we see you had a Cinderella love affair, you and another woman, and she was 16 and you were 17 and then you turned 18 and now we're going to lock you up for statutory rape. Are you serious? It's legal for us to make zina when I'm 17 and she's 16, but as soon as I hit my birthday and now it's rape? And you're not trying to understand that she was a willing participant and she says she's a willing participant? No, don't worry, it's rape, statutory rape. That's fascism, for you to know.
Yes, okay? Sir. You said
Pacini. And you want to have a classical example of it, it's in the New Testament. What Isa ibn Maryam came to wipe out in the law was fascism on the side of the Jews. If you know anything about the Bible, the New Testament, he's damning the Jews for their fascism. And the prophet mentions it as well, because the fascism is two ways. One of the ways is they only apply it when it's a poor person. This is the rule, whatever the rule is. But when it's a wealthy person, they don't pay attention to it. And this is why Esau has that famous statement in the Bible where they say, when they go to damn the prostitute, he said, yo, the first one of you that has no sin or has probably hasn't used this prostitute, stone her. But that's the way it comes in some of the apocryphilia. He says, which one of you guys that don't know this girl, haven't used this prostitute or this prostitute's friends or something like that, let you be the first one to throw the rock. And no one can do that. None of them can do that. So they have to leave her alone. You see that?
That's very fascism. Different. That's that hits very different from the way people commonly understand that story.
That's right. Because remember, the Jews, they were employing prostitutes. Right? This is one of the things Zachariah talks about. They employed prostitutes, not just used them themselves. They worked for them. They were homeowners and things like that and said, give me my money. Oh, you don't sell your body. I'm going to get my money from you. Then if something happens now, you want to stone this girl, right? It's way different. And that fascism can be seen even today. Look at them screaming about Israel has the right to defend itself while at the same time they're fighting in Ukraine. And at the same time, they're fighting in Ukraine for what they're doing in what Russia is doing it to them, what they're doing to the Palestinians. Russia ain't even doing it to them that way. Russia's defending its borders. While at the same time, they have a problem with getting out of Mali. They have a problem with leaving Niger. We're getting out of Burkina Faso. They're stealing from Congo. You get my point? They have child labor. This guy, Elon Musk, or they call him Elon Muskrat in Africa. He's got these child labor in Congo for his Tesla cars and everything. And yet he's going to talk about South Africa. I like what South Africa says. Show up, we'll murder you. I like that. That's a good. Hey, we don't care about you. We don't care about your sensitivities and all that stuff like that. Because that's the fascism. We're going to sanction you. Why? Because you're doing something that's wrong. Aren't you doing the same thing? Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. So we don't want to have that mentality. So we want to open our eyes, our ears, our noses, and actually read history, actually articulate what the law, what the Sharia is calling us to, how we're supposed to apply it, how we're supposed to understand it, and become actual lawyers in the sense that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has designed it. Does that make sense, guys?
Yes, sir.
Now, Ramadan is here. It's on our doorstep right now. So we're going to stop reading this particular chapter, and we're going to come back to it as soon as Ramadan is over and knock it out, inshallah ta'ala. But Ramadan, there's a rule of there's a time and a place for everything. Just like we stop and offer salah when the salah comes in, we have to stop when the year comes to the point where it's Ramadan, and now it's time to put everything extra down and focus on our reading of Quran, our tafsir, our dua, our salah, and our siyam. And so this is the time for that. And it would serve us well to be less busied and to stay local as much as you can, so that you can spend that extra time you're not spending cooking and traveling back and forth to the masjid or doing other things that you would be doing, focusing on your reading the Quran, you're learning the tafsir, you're making dua, and just having quiet time to think, to know to make dua, and even to plan. Planning is part of dhikrullah, because you're planning in the context of your Islam. Okay? And making these types of determinations, you know, so that when Ramadan is over and you're let go from that obligation, you're ready to apply everything you set your heart to, everything you made dua to. And with the shaitan being locked up, you can now think more clearly, inshallah ta'ala. So in keeping with that, this year, we're going to be doing the tafsir of Surah to Yusuf, just Surah to Yusuf. Okay? The difference is I'm going to promote it, you know, scene by scene. I'm going to describe it as scenes, because the surah is broken down like that. We just don't pay attention to it sometimes, so that we can, you know, maybe live it in this way. Okay? And when Ramadan is over, inshallah ta'ala, we will hopefully have a better understanding of the surah. Stronger understanding and of its application and what we can apply and benefit from it, and we'll be better for it. And then we'll come back. Normally, our class will be at 7 a.m. or 8, I'm sorry, 8 a.m. because the Fajr is like around 6 something. So our class will start at 8:00, and that's when the tafsir will start. We'll do for 1 hour and then, you know, move on Eastern time, inshallah ta'ala, except for Yom Jumu'ah. So our first class would be on Yom Sept for this particular program. Okay?
Will this be broadcast on YouTube, Sheikh?
I don't know how it's going to be broadcast this year, because the administration that I'm working with now has more control over that than I did in the past. So
will you be giving the class on?
Zoom. It's going to be like a Zoom link.
Ah, I see.
So I don't know. I will find out and get back to you as soon as I can on that, probably later on today, or at least at the latest by Friday, Yom Jumu'ah. Okay? But alhamdulillah rabbil alameen, this is what we'll be doing, inshallah ta'ala. I'm hoping that it'll be on YouTube or the other links as well. When we use StreamYard, it's easy to do it on that, but I think they want to, for some technical reasons, they want to use Zoom instead. Okay? So I don't know what that affords us to do.
Okay.
Alhamdulillah. So hopefully get ready for that. I hope it doesn't stop you from your reading or of the Quran or anything like that. It shouldn't, because I'll be reading the ayat myself every day for those days, inshallah ta'ala. So everything will be inside the audio, the video that we're going through. Okay?
No, the time is, you said 8 a.m. Eastern time?
0800. Yes, 0800. What time is it now? Is that 0800 Eastern? I think that's this time, right? Was it? No,
yeah.
I think it's...
That. So my schedule changes quite a bit during Ramadan, so I'm not sure if I can.
That may be
difficult for me. But if it's recorded, then I'll catch the recording and broadcast it here on the podcast.
JazakAllah khair, barakAllah fikum. That'd be appreciated. Okay. And if there's something you need to do with that, just contact Miss Yasin. Do you have her contact information?
I don't think so. No.
Miss Yasin Sulaiman.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, I'll send it to you. Okay.
Okay.
So she can make sure that you get the link in a way that you can use it if there's some special needs you have for it. Okay.
Okay.
Meaning for some special needs you have for how to get the link and stuff like that. Okay?
Okay.
Your question, sir? Mr. Abu Said? Okay.
You said pretend. You said they pretend this way. Why did you say they pretend? The fascists.
They pretend what? I'm sorry, I didn't understand your statement. Say it again.
You said that these a fascist is a person who pretends to be to a stickler for the law. Yeah.
Right. Why I said pretend. And I used the United States or the United Nations or NATO as an example. When did I use the law? When they're not the ones that's being accused of the same thing. Okay, so they pretend like they care about justice, right? They care. Yes, they pretend they care about the rights of people. Right? But do they care about those rights? No, they don't. Did they care about our rights when they tried to lock us down for COVID? The freedom and justice for all and freedom of choice and all these things? Yes, they didn't. Did they lock up the Bill Gates and them when he, illegally sterilized 100,000 women? Or when Israel sterilized? They don't even know how many women Israel has sterilized because they tried to sterilize every Ethiopian Jewish woman that came to visit Ethiopia, even if they just came to visit Ethiopia, Israel. They said, we have to give you a shot. And it was a sterilization shot. But Allah made their DNA so strong that some of the women still had babies. But most of them stopped having babies. They're trying to kill all the Ethiopian Jews. Why? Because they don't want that they don't want that history to come up. Because when the Ethiopian Jews, almost all the Ethiopian Jewish scholars, when they went to Israel, eventually died within 10 years. Why do you think that was?
I don't know, Chuck.
Because they were on a different Ibadah, a different Sharia. They were following the Torah. The ones here in Israel were following the Talmud. Okay? They had their tafsir for the Torah, but these people had their Talmud. The Talmud is like the Hadith. But it's worse than that. Listen, no, it's more like the Madahib, not the Hadith, like the Madahib. Madhab without Dalil. You know what I'm saying? So they didn't want the memory of these people to be telling us what we... And I remember reading how the Jews were saying these people were doing bid'ah. The things they're doing we don't recognize as being part of the Sharia of Yahud. And that's when you start having Jews calling other Jews Zionists. Zionists, you're not a Jew. And they're right. Zionism, what is Biden? He said the same thing. I'm not Jewish, but I'm a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. Okay? And so they're pushing Zionism under the title of Judaism. And anybody who knows the difference, we got to kill them. Anybody who can not just knows this, but can expose us through the books. And that's why they wanted them to bring their books. So now they put their books in a museum. No one can read it. We have it. We have access to it, not them. Okay? So, you know, this is what we have to pay attention to. They are fascists. All they do is gather the truth and hide it. Look at the Smithsonian. If you the Smithsonian looks at, they present themselves. We want the truth. We just want the truth. So let us find it and document it and make it a historic record. And they hide it. If you look at the very first edition of the Smithsonian, it talks about the giants that they found in the United States and the graves of the giants and how many pyramids they found in Illinois. And then the author of that particular research, what happens to him? He gets kicked out of the United States within weeks. Researching.
Just look at Google. What's going on with Google right now? Like, just search for any topic and see how many results you get. It's gone from like billions to like a few dozen, if that, on any given topic.
Yeah, well, it's true. You know, and it's true. And what they've done, I've noticed that sometimes when I research things, let's say I research a subject, let's say like Mongols or something like that. Instead of showing me real Mongols, they'll show me games with Mongols mm-hmm. in it and stuff like that. All this distraction stuff. Nothing real. Okay? Nothing real. I'll mention something else. They'll show me a rock group with that name. A singing group with that thing. Hiding the truth. Hiding the truth. And they'll give you so many links to that thing like this. They filled it with that nonsense. Okay? And of course, they're picking up the books because they're going to say, books have dust in them. And then you can get dust mites and you can get this and you can get Mercer. And so you can't use books anymore. Don't touch them.
Or okay? or it's so old that it'll disintegrate in your hand if you touch it. So we can't have you touching these priceless relics.
Right. This is what they're trying to say. Okay? And, you know, then there's other things that they have in some of their museums that you cannot go see unless you make an appointment and you know what you're looking for. Come on. How can I know what I'm looking for if I can't even see what's there? Okay? So this one guy had found pictures of Native Americans that were just straight black. Okay? Just straight Leroy. Okay? In Indian garb. And they were like, the guy's name was Americon. That's what his name was. Okay? And so these guys were looking like they all come from Guyana. So, you know, you see the guy and these people that like look like they're half Indian and half black, which if we have that group of people in Suriname and in Ghana, I mean, in Guyana and stuff like that. Wow. You know, it's true. You see them same type of people in Trinidad. You know, you would imagine there were some people like that in the United States. But they've got, you know, pictures of these people like hand drawn pictures and stuff like that in their libraries. So this one guy, I don't know how he found about it, but he took his camera in there and he made the appointment and he got to go in there and see it. But he was just showing that you have to know what you're looking for, request a private, viewing of the thing. And then you can't write anything down. Wow. But he pulled his camera out and showed the whole thing. I guess he had a hidden camera on him the whole time he was doing the thing because it shows him walking through. He gets close to the glass so you could see it and everything. I say, yo, man, all of this for the truth? Just because you don't want to show a picture of the people who are actually here because you want to make it seem like all the Negroes came from Africa as slaves? Again, they spend a lot of effort I'm going to call the word enchant the people to put magic on the people's eyes so they don't know what reality is. They have no clue of what reality is. What's the harm, right? You say, well, why would they do that? What's the harm? You know, maybe because we're so pure in our thing, we're so naive, we can't think of the evil behind it. But it's another move to deny people their rights. Okay? Even their right to reality, their right to land, the right to feel sense of identity. You not even stole people, you stealing their identity. And then you wonder why people are having these mental issues because they don't fit. And there's something that near had telling them something else and it just doesn't fit for them. And that may be the cause of a lot of their mental illnesses. So, alhamdulillah, I'm thankful to Allah that I'm already crazy, so it doesn't really bother me so much. You know, so alhamdulillah, rabbil alameen. May Allah bless us with sincerity and the ability to benefit and to ourselves and those around us. And may Allah allow our benefit to transcend our lives and go beyond our lives and help those that come after us and be a past that we throw forward, that there will be some access to it in the future.
Ameen. Ameen, Ya Rab.
I hope that this class has been beneficial to us. Alhamdulillah. No. Do I have any other questions?
Very beneficial, Shaykh. No, son, come on. You can't step on the stair. It's beneficial.
Jazakallah khair. Mubarakallah feekum. I'll see you in class, inshallah ta'ala. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika. Wa alaikum assalam wa barakatuh. Jazakallah khair, Shaykh. And thank you all for joining us today on Outlining Fiqh. We learned a lot about many different topics. Let's not rush things. If hadith, usul, and histories are still partially clouded in mysteries, then refrain yourself from speaking, for what can you teach? To have little knowledge and teach is to cheat. Go back to the graph and the knowledge within. There are 38 chapters to finish. Let's begin. See you all after Ramadan. Mala'u al-ardha salaman wa 'uluman wa fada'il.